Today's episode of Flags Fly Forever is brought to you by Pennant Wars, our new presenting sponsor for the podcast. If you're an avid fantasy baseball player, you're going to love Pennant Wars. It's an online baseball management game where you call the shots as the GM of your own baseball franchise. Build a team that plays your brand of baseball, draft and develop amateurs, spend big in the free agent market, or make blockbuster trades with other owners. Its in-depth and realistic simulation engine plays out full 162-game seasons, pitch by pitch. And the entire season plays out over the course of just 6 weeks. Best of all, the Pennant Wars universe is always on, meaning you can check in and manage your team from anywhere, at home, on your phone, or, I won't encourage it, but I know it happens, we've all been there, even at work. So there's only a couple months left in the fantasy baseball season, but you can get your fantasy baseball fix year-round with Pennant Wars. As soon as one season ends and a champion is crowned, the next season begins the following day. So head over to PennantWars.com and try it out for free today.
We know he's not going to keep this up, but even though it's a small sample, he's done something that we, you know, even through that sample, nobody would have expected. And you have to kind of adjust, and it's tough to balance between the small sample and making the proper adjustment.
November and the waning sun, and all the proofs I like to prove, we go down tonight.
Good evening and welcome to episode 102 of Flags Fly Forever, a Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. I'm your host, George Bissell of Baseball Prospectus, and I'm joined, as always, by Brett Sayre and Mike Gianella. Brett, Mike, how's it going tonight?
Good. It's Tuesday night. It's time to party.
Yeah, we're really excited. Woohoo.
You guys play fantasy football at all?
I have one fantasy football team, and one of my good friends drafts the team for me, for us. I partner with him because if I had to draft my own fantasy football team, I would essentially be guaranteed last place. I used to pay attention, and I just can't anymore.
I haven't played in years. Between like fantasy baseball and a regular job and, you know, kids, I just don't have time, and I think my wife would divorce me if I started playing fantasy football. Top of being in five leagues and writing articles for Baseball Prospectus.
Absolutely. So if you're listening to this, that means you're a hardcore fantasy baseball fan, and we're glad to have you. We're going to do a free-flowing show tonight. We don't really have a set topics list, so be prepared. Anything could happen. I'm excited for this format. But let's get a little bit of the housekeeping out of the way. You can read all of us at baseballprospectus.com. Subscribe today. You can follow us on Twitter. Brett is at Dynasty Guru. Mike is at Mike Gianella. And I am at George Bissell. That's with two S's and two L's. If you want to email us, you know the email address. Don't forget, subscribe, rate, review us on iTunes. We haven't had any reviews in a while, so that would be awesome if you could drop us a line there. We like to you know, hear nice things about ourselves, hopefully. So let's dive right into tonight's, I guess, topics. And I want to start with Gary Sanchez, because I don't think there's any way to avoid talking about him at this point. One of the interesting things I read today, it was a column by Ben Lindbergh, who's formerly of BP. He had a column today where he wrote about Sanchez's first 100 plate appearances and comparing them historically to some of the great plate appearance stretches over the last 50, 60 years. And Sanchez, what he's doing right now is pretty unprecedented. At this point, he's hitting .398. He's got 11 home runs in 99 plate appearances. So
I've been pretty blown away. I thought Sanchez was going to be pretty good when he got called up. I didn't think he'd be this good. So what are your impressions of Gary Sanchez so far, and what do we think is realistic going forward with him as far as what we should expect?
Yeah, I think a 1328 OPS is probably slightly more than you can expect going forward. I might lower that expectation to about a 1200 OPS just to be safe. But he has been he's been unbelievable. I mean, the thing about Sanchez is that, you know, what's been talked about forever has been, you know, the power and, you know, the questions about whether he can stay behind the plate. And because he's lingered so long in prospectum, he's lost that luster, and I think we either talked about this earlier this season on this podcast or on Tino, but he was the perfect example of prospect fatigue, where he just had been on prospect lists for so long and people were just getting tired of seeing him there and not seeing major league production. And, you know, it's 100 plate appearances, and there are 100 plate appearances that look kind of like Barry Bonds' 2001 season, but there's still 100 plate appearances. The really encouraging things about Sanchez, though, is that, one, his defense has been good enough that he can play catcher. And that is really all the Yankees are ever going to ask of him. And the second thing is that, you know, what got lost in the talk about his power tools, that he does have a real hit tool. And, he has 20 strikeouts in his first 101 major league plate appearances, which is pretty good. That's a pretty good contact rate, especially for someone who was, you know, who was striking out slightly more than that at double A and triple A last year. So this isn't someone who, once he cools off, is going to be a 240, 250 hitter. Sanchez is someone who can hit 270, 280. And obviously the power, we see what sort of potential he has there. But if you had to put an over under on his triple slash line for next season, what would you set it at?
Oh, I thought you were going to ask me about home runs. gee.
If you want to take home runs, you
can. I can ask about home runs. So, all right, so let's take a step back then. Over under on Gary Sanchez 2017 home runs, I will set it at 24.
Oh, for next year?
Yeah.
That's going to be over. And in that park, that could be over significantly.
I'll say over, but barely. I think it's like 25. I don't see 30 plus right out of it. I don't know. That's really hard to do. That's asking a lot.
Yeah, I think 30 home runs is asking an awful lot of Sanchez in 2017.
Yeah.
I get it, because he's looked fantastic, but I think I would set it right around there, right around 24, 25.
I mean, really, the questions weren't about his bat. I don't think the hit tool, like you said, Brett, I don't think there was ever any serious questions about it. It was more on the defensive end of the spectrum. It's, was he going to evolve enough? Because he was really a brutal behind the plate. I mean, he had problems with pass balls, with errors. His arm was always strong, but he just really had problems on the receiving end of things. And you know, once he cleaned those up, he was one of the best hitters in the Arizona Fall League this past year. So I don't think the bat, there were really any serious questions or doubts about it. So,
well, there weren't doubts about it, but if you look at his numbers, it affected his bat in a way that, you know, mm-hmm. he went from being a really good hitter in A ball you know, kind of an above average hitter where, you know, people thought the bat would play, but it was a question of, well, you know, it will have to play behind the plate or, you know, won't play as a first baseman or DH. You know, there were some of those, you know, facile Jesus Montero comparisons. You know, and I, as we know, we hate comps, but you heard some of that. You heard some of those similar comparisons, like, well, you know, he won't be able to make it as a catcher, and if you have to use him as a first baseman, you know, then he just won't cut it there. You know, now obviously it looks like he can catch, and you know, even if he had to play first base, you know, to go back to your question about OPS, you know, what's really funny about him, you know, he has a coming in tonight is a 1328 OPS in the majors. He had an 807, you know, in the minors. You know, you expect that to be, you know, well, you don't really expect a 1328, but you'd expect the opposite if you were going to, you know, see something like that. You know, over under for me is probably, you know, 900 is probably a safe number, and that might be a little bit too high. But someone like this is hard to predict because we know he's not going to keep this up. Mm-hmm. But even though it's a small sample, he's done something that we, you know, even through that sample, nobody would have expected. And you have to kind of adjust. And it's tough to balance between the small sample and making the proper adjustment.
I feel like I'm in that scene. Remember that scene in the West Wing when there's the debate and Bartlett is debating Richie and he gives him the 10-word answer and he goes, 10-word answers will kill you. I want to hear the next 10 words of your speech. And that's how I feel about Sanchez a little bit, like what you're saying about the 100 plate appearances. I want to see what the next 100 plate appearances look like. So Sanchez is definitely fascinating. I'll ask you guys, who would you rather have next year, Sanchez or Schwarber?
Schwarber.
I like it. Mike?
I want Sanchez just if only because of the health, and I think Schwarber will be fine. But between the health and what really is a crowded situation in Chicago, you know, I know that there's, you know, they're going to find a place for him. But I'm kind of leaning Sanchez right now.
Yeah, I think it's really close. It's kind of, you know, similar profiles too.
If Schwarber looks healthy, and you know, it's a bit of a cop out, but if Schwarber looks healthy in March, I might change my answer.
Yeah. Okay. So on a similar line with Sanchez. This is what I found that was interesting. I was on Baseball Reference using the play index, and I kind of punched in Sanchez's numbers, or at least a close approximation to them, and looked at hitters who have, in their first 200 plate appearances, hit at least 300 with 5 home runs. And what I found was interesting, there have only been 25 of these seasons since 1985, where in fewer than 200 plate appearances, a hitter's batted at least 300 with 5 home runs, and 3 of them are this year. Do you guys know who the other 2 are?
I have no idea.
Okay. It's Trey Turner and David Dahl, who...
Dahl we should have known since he's on our labor team.
That's true.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Like, Sanchez, he's obviously been great, but you could make an argument that what Trey Turner and David Dahl are doing is even more impressive and maybe a bit more tantalizing from a long-term fantasy standpoint. So I'd love to hear what you guys think about Turner and Dahl and how good they've been, because they've been outstanding.
Yeah, not even just from a long-term fantasy standpoint, just from a this year fantasy standpoint. I mean, Trey Turner, I hate to do pacing because it's just, it's terrible, but... Trey Turner is on – he's hitting 341. You can't pace batting average. But over 150-game season, he is on pace for 60 steals and 115 runs.
That's a first-round pick.
And 15 home runs.
Yeah.
I don't think this batting average is for real. I think he's more of a 280 hitter with that speed, and I think pitchers are gonna eventually figure out that he doesn't really like to walk either, so maybe even slightly lower than that. But that speed, I mean, he just stole his 18th base earlier tonight. It's it's pretty game changing. I mean, outside of Billy Hamilton, how many people are going to be threats to steal 60 bases next year?
And get that type
just
of
Turner?
Time. Yeah.
Turner and Hamilton, that's probably
that's it.
Like that's if, it, unless Jared Dyson learns how to hit, that's it.
Or if they were gonna guarantee Jankowski every day at bats or something crazy out in San Diego. That's a good point. Yeah, Turner's fantastic. Mike,
well, you know, what I was thinking about Turner is, you know, what you're kind of looking at, you know, even if some of these numbers do level off, particularly the batting average, he kind of reminds me of Jose Altuve before all that power came for Altuve this year. A package with a really healthy amount of steals, and, you know, 60 is a lot to ask for, but if he can steal 40 and hit those 10 to 15 home runs, you're looking at a really valuable player. And he's the kind of player I like that teams, you know, for years, you know, and we didn't butt heads about this, Brett, this year in labor, but we kind of were talking about some of the players we were looking at, Manny Machado's who we got, you know, and Altuve was the guy I was kind of considering there. And the conventional wisdom is you can't take a guy like Altuve at 7, you know, because it's a big speed package. But when that speed package is attached to 15 home runs and some runs batted in, some runs, it's different than a Billy Hamilton who, you know, you're pretty much drafting the steal. So, yeah, I like Turner a lot. And I have to say, I wasn't wrong at him exactly, but I didn't think he would do this and do it this fast.
Are we, as an industry, maybe overrating young players a little bit too much now? As in, we're kind of taking it for granted, the numbers that they're putting up, or is this just a really impressive group of, you know, a generational talent group that we're seeing here that's just blowing everyone out of the water, historically speaking? Is that what we're looking at here, or is this just or are we maybe putting too much stock into the numbers that we're seeing early on from these top prospects that are getting called up and really having success at the level they are?
Yeah, I think what we're seeing is, I think as a whole, major league being a rookie hitter, at least for the first, you know, somewhere between 1 to 300 at bats, is becoming easier, and I think. I wonder whether part of that is because there's more advanced work being done on pitchers for them than there are than the advanced work is being done on them by opposing teams, because, you know, there are a lot of these players who are coming out of the gate and just raking, and I mean, we all know the adjustment period is coming. It just seems like more of them are performing immediately, and, you know, it's really not the same for pitchers. I mean, how many, these are all hitters we're talking about, but how many pitchers have come up and been really good? Where's the person who's coming up and doing what Noah Syndergaard did last year?
If they gave Julio Urias the innings, maybe, but it's not going to happen. You're right.
Yeah, but
that's a good point.
He's been fine, but he hasn't been
for a 19-year-old.
But, well, you know, the one thing I'll say about right. this though is there is some, like, selectivity to this. Last year's crop. Well, there's a couple things. So last year's crop of rookies was even among the hitters was better. There just were guys who just kept coming up and kept coming up. And we know this from, you know, the Fab reports. Part of the reason the Fab reports are so boring and we haven't talked about them as much is, you know, last year it just seemed like every 2 or 3 weeks there was a hot rookie coming into labor to bid on. You know, this year there's been a few of those guys, but it hasn't been as prevalent. But then, you know, for as great as Gary Sanchez has been, as great as Turner's been, as great as Dahl's been, you have guys now, I'm not knocking them as players, I'm talking about them more as fantasy commodities. Nomar Mazara has been okay. I mean, he hasn't now, you know, you have to keep his age into consideration, and I'm not knocking him as a player, I think he's going to be great. But for fantasy for 2016 alone, he hasn't really blown the doors off like you'd expect. You know, Alex Bregman struggled a little bit at the beginning. You know, he's improved, but he's only hitting 242. Again, this is a knock Bregman. It's just to kind of make the point that I think there's some selectivity when we look at these players, and you know, we're saying that they're all succeeding. I will say that something I do notice or observe, scouting has gotten better, and we've gotten better, and when I say we, I kind of mean we as the baseball community, at identifying some of these people, and it's more likely that organizations are correct when they promote players and they put them into this position. You know, the days, you know, it certainly happens, but the days of a Brandon Wood, and maybe it's just my perception, but being hyped the way he is and being hyped all the way to that level to the majors and just failing, you don't see that quite as much anymore as you used to. Like the failures are guys who are still producing at the major league level, even if they're not, you know, producing at a Gary Sanchez pace.
Yeah, those are some really good takes. I agree with most of that. I like the one you had, Brett, about there's a lot more advanced scouting on pitchers now than there maybe is on hitters. I think we know more about pitchers with PitchFX and StatCast. Those are really good points. I never really occurred to me on that angle. But I want to get your guys' thoughts on more of the top of the draft board, because I think more than we did a year ago, we're seeing more players enter the conversation as first-round guys. I'm talking specifically about where someone like Mookie Betts, you know, Chris Bryant, Corey Seager, you have Carlos Correa really establishing himself as a first-round type of talent. Are we going to see more turnover at the top of the draft board and some of the tops of your auction values looking at next year's sort of class? I know it's really early in the process, but it feels to me like we're going to see a pretty substantial change at the top of most draft boards next year.
I think there'll be some, but yeah, I mean, are you inferring that we are lowering Mike Trout from the number one overall spot in 2017?
Well, I threw it out on Twitter, I'm willing to engage in this debate a little bit, but would you seriously consider Mookie Betts over Mike Trout?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Would not, literally would not even cross my mind. And I like Betts a lot.
All right, then I'm the only one who's completely insane on this program. Mike, you're still Trout over Betts by a mile, correct?
Well, maybe not a mile, but yeah. Trout to me is still the no-brainer number one. Now, if you want to, I think a more interesting conversation would be Bryce Harper. If you're going to have this conversation, Bryce Harper versus Mookie Betts is the more interesting conversation to have, because Trout, you know, some of what you're getting with Trout with that number one or with, like, you know, a big buy in the auction, you're getting this great stability. Like Mookie Betts next year, he could do this again, but he could slip. Like we still don't really know. You know, when I say slip, you know, I mean slip a little bit. I think he's a good player. Yeah. But, you know, Harper's a guy who really had that one lights out year in 2015, and, you know, he's banged up once in a while. The batting average is low. You know, some of that is he kind of gets pitched around a little bit. But, you know, he's a guy you have to kind of look at where you're like, well, he was two this year. Is he still a two? Like, I don't think so. And then the question is, how far? He's still a first rounder to me, but he's not a no brainer two or three at next year, at least not my opinion. Brett, what do you think about Harper?
I honestly, he might not even be in the top five.
Right. That's what I'm saying. He's still a first rounder.
I still love him long term. And I think there's a very, very interesting discussion to be had as to whether Bryce Harper or Mookie Betts is a better asset in a dynasty league. But if we're not talking about that, we're talking about 2017. I think Betts over Harper is a reasonably easy call for 2017. And I think it comes down to risk. I mean, I don't think Mookie Betts is going to hit 30 home runs next year. Right. I would absolutely take the under on 30 home runs. I might even take the under on 25. But I believe in the batting average. I believe in the counting stats. I believe in him as a almost a almost as much of a lock to go 2020 as anybody. And I think, well, I mean, besides Trout, but I think that there is just so much value in that all around production that, I would take that.
Well, I was going to say, I just pulled up the PFM since my valuations, I haven't done them in a while. Yeah, you've got in a 15 team mixed, you've got Betts, Altuve, Trout, Chris Bryant, and Jonathan VR, you know, because the PFM, you know, overvalue steals a little bit in your top five.
Brett's right, though. Yeah. It's the stability in the floor. For the record, I'm still Trout over Betts, but I think it's a lot more interesting now than it was a year ago. This is really a transcendent campaign, what we're seeing from Mookie Betts. I mean, nobody since the 2012 version of Trout has, you know, done what he's done, hitting .322 with 30 bombs and 20 steals. I mean, Trout obviously that year stole 50 bases, so it's a little different. But
well, and there's still really the funny thing is it's a thing. They're still really close, you know, with Betts having this, you know, Betts ahead of him, but they're still really close, even with Betts having this, you know, out of his mind campaign. You know, I think what we're betting on with Trout is the fact that we know, you know, that the boring Mike Trout season is going to be like a 30-25 season this year, yeah, or around there when all said and done. It's like, oh, ho-hum, you know, Mike Trout did it again. Whereas with Betts, it's like, well, are you sure he's going to hit 30 again? Like if Mookie Betts hit 20 home runs next year, you'd probably be surprised, but you wouldn't be shocked. You would look at it like, okay, well, you know, he came down to earth a little bit. He's still a heck of a player, and, you know, I'm glad I got that, but you're not banking on 30 home runs for Mookie Betts in 2017.
Yeah.
No, and the weird thing is if you look at Betts and Trout and compare them to each other and from a valuation standpoint, and I'm sure we'll talk about this in the offseason, Mike, but Mike Trout is hitting .316. Mookie Betts is hitting .322. Mookie Betts has 100 more at-bats than Mike Trout. Wow. That is a huge driver in value. You can't overlook that. I mean, Mike Trout is leading the American League in walks. He's got 91 walks. Mookie Betts has 35, and Betts is playing in a lineup that just keeps getting on base, and he keeps getting at bats. It's like the Jimmy Rollins effect, where when Rollins was on those really good Phillies teams and he wasn't really walking a ton, his batting average would be worth much more than you would think based on just looking at his average, because he racked up so many at bats.
Yeah. And if you flip the PFM from batting average to on base, you know, Trout's ahead of Betts, obviously, because then you've got Trout with a .434 on base. And the plate appearances are within about 40 fewer for Trout versus Betts, who has a .361, which is still solid, but that's just such a big driver for Trout. And then suddenly, you know, Harper, you know, who we're kind of maligning before, you know, he's got a .386, you know, and he's, and interestingly enough, still not in the top 10 among hitters, but he's 14th. You know, so yeah, it's, you know, if you're using OBP like they do in Tout Wars, you know, different conversation. But yeah, Betts still kind of this year at least still holds his own. You know, still a heck of a player. You know, these are the fun debates where it's like, how far up are you moving Betts? You know, he went what, like 14th this year on average, I think, was his final ADP.
Yeah, right around there.
Yeah, he's got to go in the top five, I would think. You know, just spitballing it. You know, I haven't really, you know, finalize it, but he's got to go, I would think, in the top five.
Yep. So I guess the next topic I want to touch on is, just off the top of your heads, we haven't put a lot of thought into this, but who's maybe a player or two that stood out to you, you know, that has stood out to you the most this year as someone that has really impressed you or that you think has improved their stock substantially from where it was at this time a year ago? I'd be interested to know who you guys kind of look at as, this guy really surprised me and I wasn't expecting this, or I didn't think he'd be this good. We'll go positive first and then maybe we can do a negative side of things later. But who's someone that surprised you? I guess I'll throw it out to you, Mike, first.
Well, I just mentioned him Well, you know what? I just mentioned him, and it's kind of obvious. I was going to go with VR, but that's too obvious. So I'm going to mention the guy he replaced in John Segura. So, you know, we know the deal with Segura. He kind of had like disappeared for a couple of years, and you know, a little bit of that was there was a tragedy with his, you know, very young son. And you know, some of what happened with Segura is, you know, and I had read this recently, he changed his approach. He's, you know, still never going to be you know, an on-base guy, obviously. That's just not what his game is. But you know, he's kind of swinging smarter at the plate, and you can kind of see it if you've watched him. And I did watch him a little bit in the middle of the year to kind of see if this is real or if it was just something that was an illusion. His swing looks more contained. So even though he's still a free swinger, he's not a free swinger in that way where he's just hacking at everything. He's doing it in a more intelligent and moderated way. And yeah, he's never going to be a superstar for fantasy, or, you know, and certainly not in real life. But I can see what he's doing, and particularly in that park and at the top of that lineup, which they probably shouldn't leave him there, but that's another story, being completely sustainable. You know, I thought Segura was just going to kind of survive and have a little bit of, I don't want to say a dead cat bounce, but become like a, you know, an okay player compared to the black hole he was for fantasy in Milwaukee the last 2 years. But he's been more than that.
Yep. Brett, who you got?
I'm going to take this opportunity to talk about someone that I don't know if anyone has talked about on a fantasy podcast this year. And I literally don't think we've even mentioned his name this season.
It's not Kyle Bearclaw, is it?
It is not.
Okay.
It's Ian Kinsler.
Ooh.
The thing that I love about this is that there are so few things that fantasy owners clutch to, like clutch to their beliefs about. And one of them recently is that you don't invest in second basemen that are aging into their 30s. That's a position that just drops off. It gets ugly fast, and you hear all kinds of other cliches about that. Kinsler has changed his approach this year, and it seems to be working for him. He has 23 home runs. He's gonna get close to 30. He hasn't done that since 2011, and he's doing it by trading some contact for some punch. And you know, he's 34. He's going to turn 35 3 months into next season. So he's nobody's version of a sleeper or you know, someone who has a crazy upside. But he is doing everything that he is physically capable of doing, and he's been a top 50 overall player this year that really has gone completely unnoticed. He's going to score 110 runs again. He's going to he's hitting home runs. He's even stealing bases too. He's probably going to finish with 15 or 16 stolen bases. You know, he gets lost in the shadow of the big second base, the big little second baseman. But you know, Kinsler is just a really, really fun fantasy story, because I don't think anyone either saw this coming or wanted particularly to invest in him at the beginning of the season. And he's been fantastic, and it makes me question how long he can keep this up for. You know, makes for a really interesting value proposition in 2017 based on what he's shown this year.
This is something we've talked about on previous podcasts, but there's a lot of what you've called it, Brett, anchoring, which is, it takes sometimes people a while to recognize changes in player value. They're just so ingrained with their vision of who a player is that it takes a while for them to change that. So Kinsler definitely could be, yeah, one of those guys next year. The name for me that stands out is Christian Yelich, because I had this debate. I've talked with Craig Goldstein, our colleague at BP. I must have talked about this with him like 1,000 times this offseason, arguing with him that there's no way Christian Yelich could hit 15 home runs with a 60% ground ball rate. It's just not physically possible. But he's done that this year. He's at 15 home runs as we speak tonight. He's hitting .304, and his ground ball rate is 60%. It was 63% last year. So he's still putting the ball on the ground a ton, but he's hitting for substantially more power. So that's the thing that's really stood out to me, is just how good Christian Yelich is. He's 24 right now, so this is a guy who's quickly become one of the best hitters in the game. And it seems likely that 15 home runs, that could be his new baseline moving forward. And if he can start putting the ball in the air even more, he could hit more than 15. We're talking about a guy who could potentially hit 20. So I've been impressed that he's been able to hit more home runs while keeping the same ground ball rate. That to me just kind of blows my mind, but that's the stat I go look at every single day, and I just can't believe it's real. So Christian Yelich for me, I've definitely been impressed by him. On the other side of the spectrum, who's a player that has maybe disappointed you this year that you thought you were going to get more out of, as from a fantasy standpoint, putting injuries aside, because I think that's easy to gravitate towards, but who from just a strictly on-field performance standpoint has really kind of let you down this year, Mike?
Well, he had a good outing tonight, but the guy who jumps out at me, who is Adam Wainwright. And some of that is, so Wainwright got off to a slow start, and the injury, even though he had, Brett, remember our rationale about him, which was, he didn't pitch. He was coming off they shaved the cartilage in his arm, but they didn't pitch because that awful Achilles injury. And it was like, great, his arm will be rested. But he just didn't have the stamina, because, you have to push off, and he just didn't look like he was pushing off correctly, and he wasn't throwing, his curve wasn't very effective, which that's his bread and butter pitch. The strike percentage on that went up, the numbers got better, but now he just looks, he looked good tonight, so maybe he turned around, but on the season, he just looked kind of off again the last month or so. He's 35 years old. He does have a couple of arm procedures. There's that balance with Wainwright of, on the one hand, because of the procedures he's had on his arm, he doesn't have a lot of miles on that arm. But on the other hand, you do kind of wonder at his age, and because of that, how much he has left. I think he'll be okay going forward, and I see him bouncing back a little bit next year. I just don't see him as that sneaky ace he's been in the past, where the strikeouts are low, but he somehow manages to have a really good ERA because he generates poor contact on top of the strikeouts that he does get.
Mm-hmm. Brett?
Yeah, my first inclination was to talk about Andrew McCutchen, but I don't really want to talk about Andrew McCutchen.
He's still pretty good.
He's still really good. He's still really good. I'd still be buying on him for 2017. I don't know what is going on this year, but I find it extraordinarily hard to believe that he is now a middling outfielder at 29, after being a legitimate MVP candidate for a couple of years. But I don't know. I guess we are talking about him now.
Not Justin Upton.
Talking about Justin Upton is just depressing.
So bad.
I don't want to do it. But McCutchen is he's hitting .251. He's striking out a little bit more. He's walking a lot less. The power is still there. He's going to hit 20 home runs this year. The steals, the speed, I think, unfortunately, is gone. Gone in the fact that I don't think he's a reliable 15 steal guy anymore. I'm sure when he is, if this is health related, when he is healthy, he will steal more and more successfully than this. I mean, he's got 6 stolen bases in 13 attempts this year, which is just sad. But he, yeah,
his BABIP is so low. It's like 40 points below his career average right now, I think.
It is, and you wonder how much has to do with the injuries that he's had. I mean, the knee. No one believes that the knee is 100%, or at least has been 100% for most of the year. He's been banged up in other ways too, and he was coming off 4 straight years of a 400 on base percentage, and his on base percentage is .329 this year. So I am not giving up on him by any means. I am buying him in keeper and long term leagues, and I refuse to believe that this is the end. If McCutchen were hitting .280 or .290, as I think he probably should be by his by just his regular contact profile, I don't think anyone would be making much of a big deal about this. The only thing that people would be complaining about is that he doesn't really run that much anymore, and that is not great, but he's been trending down anyway. It was 18 steals in 2014, 11 steals last year. Anyone who was expecting a return to 20 steals was probably...
The guy for me, I think, just really quickly, is Jose Abreu. For a guy who was a top 3-round pick, really not that impressive this year. He's given you nothing in terms of stolen bases. The average is still good. I mean, he's hitting .287, but... this is a guy who hit 30 home runs in each of the past 2 seasons. He's at 18 right now. I know we still have a month to go, but just from a power standpoint, Jose Abreu has really dropped off this year, and I don't know how much of that is coming back. It could, but I haven't been overly impressed with Abreu. And given that first base is so strong right now, when you look at guys like Brandon Belt and Eric Hosmer, who have really stepped up and developed into legitimate superstars, it's really hard to have a ton of confidence in Jose Abreu as returning to that apex of fantasy first baseman. So that's the guy for me that kind of really was disappointing this year. This has been fun. Anybody have any final thoughts here before we wrap up? I think this has been a pretty good show. I've enjoyed this one.
Yeah. George, how did you celebrate Kyle Barraclough's 100th strikeout?
Kyle Barraclough. He's crazy because I didn't see it, so I'd love to say that I was ready for it and I had, an actual Barraclough out there to eat, but I did not. The crazy thing about him is that isn't he leading the majors in walk rate too?
Yeah, I think he has 6 walks per 9 innings.
It's stupid. Yeah. I don't understand how he can exist. It's awesome. I love it.
I'd say he's a two true outcomes guy because he doesn't. I think he's given up a home run this year, so he's not quite a 3 true outcomes pitcher. Those guys are fun, but
he's who we thought Ken Giles was gonna be. Like no control, but striking out 13 per 9, and yeah, so. Fun.
Yeah, but Giles actually has control.
No, I know. That's the scary part. I mean, because he didn't in the minor leagues at all.
So. Yeah. Remember when that was Craig Kimbrell?
Yes. Yep.
Relievers when Kimbrell had no control and was just walking people left and right.
Relievers are weird, man. Edwin Diaz, there's so many good relievers.
Yeah. You know what Kyle Barraclough's DRA is?
Like negative 20?
2.21.
That's awesome. We talked about Kyle Barraclough so much last year. It was crazy.
I know.
Yeah. He good. All right. So we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back and wrap things up.
Mm-hmm.
And we're back. Thank you for listening to episode 102 of Flags Fly Forever. This has been a Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. Subscribe today with a one-year premium membership to read all of us and the entire fantasy team on baseballprospectus.com. Sign up for a super premium membership. Get access to the Bat Signal, our personalized fantasy answering service. If you want to send us a question, you can hit us up on Twitter. Mike is at Mike Gianella, Brett is at Dynasty Guru, and I am at George Bissell. If you want to email us, flagsflyforever at baseballprospectus.com. Subscribe, rate, review us on iTunes. So we are off for 2 weeks, and then we'll come back. We'll talk September call-up stuff, as well as look forward to the final 2 weeks of the season. We'll go into some strategy and try and help you win your league if you have a chance. We'll definitely do that for you. So get ready. We'll be back in 2 weeks. For Mike Gianella and Brett Sayre, it's George Bissell saying thanks for listening. Till the next show. So long, everybody.
Goodbye.
And we're out. Imagine if he stopped walking people.
Could you imagine if he had a catcher who didn't frame like he was being shot?
Oh man.
Oh, so true. Marlins, man. Marlins gonna Marlin.
JT Realmuto has literally been worth negative 3 wins the last 2 years just in framing.
Wow. He's like the anti Zanino.
That's like stupid.
He is exactly like that. Yeah,
Mike Zunino, he's awesome. He just crushes home runs randomly. Like,
yeah, I mean, he's hitting. Realmuto is hitting 302 as a catcher. He's hitting 302, 346, 408 as a catcher.
And he's negative.
Is a 2.5 win player.
Oh, I thought he was gonna be like a replacement level. I was like, damn.
No, and his like defense is actually. His like standard defense is pretty good. Mm. He is terrible. His adjusted FRA is -10.7.